Okay, this episode is mainly about the return of the Zuck and some very exciting announcements from Meta Connect that are actually genuinely really good, which is cool. It was nice to see lots of people excited about it, lots of people who seemingly didn't really care about the metaverse getting excited about these products. So lots of interesting stuff there, and we'll talk about why it's interesting, not just the updates. You may have heard some of those, but we'll get stuck into it. But then on the flip side, some kind of surprising news from Epic Games that they are laying off 16% of the workforce, which I was surprised by for sure, even though it's been a bit of a trend in tech over the last few months. And there's a lot of conversation around multimodal AI. What is that? AI is beginning to be able to recognize things visually in the world and understand them, and audibly as well. There's some problems with that, despite it being really exciting too. So yeah, loads to get stuck into this week. Let's get through Meta Connect because it was a cool one.
It was a cool one.
Yeah.
Was it? You know that Apple, like they pre-record all of their shows now. They don't. It was like, you know, during COVID, obviously they recorded everything and they're like, yeah, we're just going to keep doing that because there isn't any risk of us having embarrassing, awkward moments on stage live. So everyone was like, do you remember during the pandemic, Apple did this recorded event and it was like, this is the gold standard of how events should be. This is how we should all do it from now on. And then this last one, everyone was like, yeah, I'm kind of a bit sick of this now. It's just like so overproduced and so carefully scripted and everything else. It was just like, meh. So Meta went live. They went on stage. It was a bit awkward, wasn't it? Little bit awkward.
Well, these things are always a little bit awkward because it is kind of a bit nerd fest, really, isn't it? But like, it's still exciting. And I know I've sort of, I don't know, I might regret saying it, but Zuck is endearing me with his awkwardness more and more because at least he's not sort of trying to be cool a lot of the time. Like, I know there's like loads of past stuff that we shouldn't forget in general, rumors about data and all the kind of things there. Yeah, I think you can see his genuine excitement for stuff, which is nice. Like, and he just sort of...
He might be about to open up his Terminator 2 arc. Terminator 1, Arnold Schwarzenegger, most lethal killer robot in history. Terminator 2, lovable goofball.
Ah.
I'll be back. You know? Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah.
Like, Zuck, you know, he might be going through an Act 2 redemption arc here.
Mm.
That seems to be the messaging, and I have a feeling that it's all bollocks and it was always bollocks, but you're not wrong. There is a feeling of a new Zuck, a refreshed Zuck. He's pounded so many glasses of athletic greens before pounding the crap out of people in MMA that he's just like, he's rejuvenated. He's a proto-human man now rather than some kind of lizard thing. But yeah, that seems to be the messaging, right?
Yeah.
It's not about the tech.
It's not about tech,
no. The guy.
But we should speak about the tech as well. So lots of things dropped this week. Most recently, there has been a podcast with Lex Friedman, who you'd know probably very well if you're into the tech space, and Zuck, where they are demonstrating Meta's in-development codec avatars. Now, this was really cool to watch, because mainly for Lex's reaction, because he was kind of got quite emotional about what he was experiencing. If you've not seen it, it's pretty incredible. Essentially, they did really detailed 3D scans of both Zuck and Lex, which creates photorealistic 3D avatars that kind of cross the valley of the uncanny valley. Really kind of pretty convincing and interesting. And then they are powered through the Meta, or driven through the Meta Quest Pro headset. So they are in different rooms, but they are driving photorealistic versions of themselves. And you obviously get a sense of it from watching the video, but Lex was really like, this is a step past anything that we've seen before. So it was really cool to watch.
Do you listen to Lex? Do you consume his...
Yeah, now and again. Yeah, I mean, I do like his stuff. I always, at the beginning, because he says himself, he's a very monotone person. And Zuck is quite a monotone person.
It's an acquired taste, but it's one of those things like, this is cigar and whiskey content. It's not like go and like run on the treadmill and pound while you're listening. It's like, hello, my friends. You know, go and check this out. These are the tools I actually use. I'm optimistic about the future. I've been coding some stuff and I discovered that gold is a base metal, and I got really excited about that. It's like, oh my God, like get on with it. But then you kind of settle into it, and like the conversations he has with people are very different to the kind of clickbaity or just like that, just harass someone to get the clicks, the clips out of it. And there tends to be a kind of trend in podcasts to be the most sort of noteworthy, clickable. He's just not that, and he's never changed. So it's quite fun. It's just a fucking grind. You have to listen to them at 2x speed, you know. But he also does get quite emotional about all sorts of weird things and technology and these things. So for him to be emotional about this thing was normal, but it shouldn't detract from the fact that basically Kodak Avidars, they announced them back in 2021, and it was, despite all the crap they've taken for Horizon Worlds and everything else, you could see with Kodak Avidars that this was going to be a really, really impressive piece of technology. And it's probably worth just describing what it is that they do, because a VR headset sits really close to your face, and in no possible way should it be able to read the full range of your facial expressions. But what happens is that you get a scan of your face, and then the cameras and all the sensors and everything else inside the device are able to read your entire face, build a topography of that face, and then translate it onto a realistic, photorealistic facial avatar that is pretty much exactly like you. It's not like it's close. And trust me when I tell you this, because I spend a huge amount of time working on facial mocap, trying to improve it, trying to get it better, trying to get it to a place where it's like, does the emotion in my face actually come through and read? We're miles off. And yet you look at these Kodak avatars and you're like, damn, son. And the thing is, like, all of that, great, when you watch it on a website or in a YouTube video, being there, being inside, and having this thing that Zuck has always talked about, he's never deviated from it, this idea of social presence, that you have connection and closeness to people in a digital environment, in a digital context, that's it. And it's always been it. Despite all of this other stuff, all the flim-flam and games and everything else, the ability to just be close to someone and connect with them is going to be the killer for all of this. It's going to be the thing that you care about. And like, it is goofy and the headset on your face, but fundamentally, where that transports you to and what it will open up, I'm very optimistic about that. And it's fun to see it actually out in the wild, finally.
Yeah. And yeah, that's like the most human thing, isn't it? To be able to sit with somebody, your friend or family member that you can't be physically with and have that experience. So yeah, it was very cool. Also, Zuck sort of, it was interesting hearing him speak, sort of changing the messaging a bit when he did that big, the main Meta announcement a couple of years ago. Like, he was talking about really a sort of virtual future and a digital world that we'd be in. He's much more talking now about this sort of blended reality, which is really interesting. And they sort of ran some thought experiments of how many physical things do you really need in a space if you're able to walk in with glasses when they become glasses, and you don't need TV screens anymore because they can be digitally wherever you want, and you don't need that physical item in the room. So he started talking about this experience that we'll all get used to of a blend of physical and digital items and things that we interact with, and that will kind of be the norm of reality, which I thought was really interesting. So that's where it's going with it, and that kind of leads on to mixed reality stuff as well. The other one of the other announcements was around the Quest 3, which we saw the sort of top line stuff mentioned a few months ago, but they went on to talk about and demonstrate some of the capabilities here. And I've always thought you can tell with the Quest sort of range of products, like they are obviously early adopter stuff, and it's that classic kind of graph of like not many people use it at first, and then slowly more and more people come in, and they are getting much closer to sort of mass adoption here. I always thought the mixed reality element of it, aka you can sit in your room and see your physical environment and then have things mapped onto the space and interact with it, I thought it's like kind of cool. I can see how that gets to the future, but I thought it was a bit gimmicky at this point in time. But they demonstrated some cool stuff. Like, there's zombie games where you'd be in your room and zombies would kind of come out of portals from your wall, but if you hid behind your sofa and they were shooting you, then the bullets would hit the sofa and you'd be that would actually block it in the game, and all these types of things. And they also talked about how for the average person, which I think is very true, this is like a good stepping stone into this world where you're not sort of being taken fully out of your physical reality, which is really immersive and interesting in full VR, but it's also can be a bit scary and a bit daunting because you are completely sort of blind to anything else. Whereas this is a really nice transition where people can be like, oh, I can see how these worlds combine. Then maybe they'll want to go more into virtual reality as well. So I was like, okay, I get where they're going with all of this as well. And the Quest 3 in general, very quick sort of spec that improves from the other models. They obviously dropped the Quest Pro, which was a sort of more industry version, I guess, but there's like a wider field of view. They've got this dedicated brand new chip for it. There's a higher resolution, more so than the Quest Pro. This true color pass through into mixed reality. It's way thinner, I think like 47% thinner. So it's noticeably they've squashed everything down, managed to get stuff in a lot better. There's no eye tracking, which is in the Quest Pro, but it's $500 rather than $1,500. So it's cool. It'll be really interesting to see how this develops. Is this the moment where more developers will get on board and the whole ecosystem will grow? There'll be more games, more experiences because more people will have it in their hands. I think we're getting there.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack here. I think there was a recent earnings call where Zuck got taken to the cleaners by, you know, investors. It's obviously a public company. And so there's a deep concern about the size of the bet that Zuck has made on the metaverse. We're kind of 2 years into that now. And I think it's a bit easier to see how some of these technologies that are growing up, like the AI side of things, like the codec avatars, start to play into the vision of where this is going. But, you know, the thing is, what everyone fails to understand is that there's a need to be flexible as you develop these things out, and you can change the thesis somewhat, and you can pivot, and you can adapt, and you must according to what's going on. But his idea about what the metaverse is can only be realized by creating the technologies and the platforms that make it possible for it to exist. And I think everyone has just been so hard on him. There was a Jarvis Johnson video that came out where he spent out a week in Horizon Worlds and was just all over it. 2.3 million people watched that video. And it was just like, oh yeah, this thing was a giant failure. And yet you have this cognitive dissonance where the company is putting out product. They are delivering things. And they also have the scale. You know, you forget still, Facebook is very widely used. WhatsApp, very widely used. Instagram, very widely used. They have the ability to onboard people in a way that very few companies, maybe other than Apple, can do. And that still means something. So yeah, they're spending money up the wazoo to get this there. But like, you know, probably the mature version of what Zuck has in his head doesn't really become reality until into the 2030s. The 2030s. Like, that's some way off. So, you know, it's easy to dunk on Zuck in the moment. But, you know, we talk about tech visionaries, these people who see the future and bet on it, Elon Musk and Steve Jobs. And if those visionaries see things that other people don't, therefore they are existing in a space where most people won't get it. And it's quite possible that Zuck is entirely right and he's entirely there. But he's also, you know, CEO, one of the last remaining CEOs of his era, in charge of a huge company capable of reworking reality to their own story, to their own narrative. And of course, the thing about Zuck is you just don't trust the guy. Like, fundamentally, nobody trusts him. But they're talking about decentralization. They're talking about open metaverses. They're talking about a bunch of things that we should be positive about. And I am Team Zuck. I genuinely believe that there's something going on here that we can be hopeful and positive about in ways that other companies simply are not. But maybe I'm just an optimistic fool. But I kind of dig it.
Yeah, you know, same to be honest. And, you know, they open source Llama 3, didn't they? Their AI model. And they're certainly going a little bit more in that direction on the surface anyway.
Yeah, they did. They did. They sort of let it go.
Maybe yeah. It escaped.
It kind of got out. It's like, we'll give it to some scientists and none of them are going to share it with anyone. Because no, they would never do that. But of course they did. But yes, I mean that's a thing, and so I think that there's the Quest 3 is obviously it's an interesting product. It's not a groundbreaking product. I think the Quest 2 really was the one where it was just like, oh yeah, you can just buy this thing, put it on, and go. And if you've ever played PC VR, it's a little bit of a flap. I mean, it is better, yeah, definitely, but it's a bit of a flap. Just having a standalone headset, it's just a ton more fun, and there's no doubt that most of the fun gaming that I've done in the last couple of years has been on the Quest. I had so much fun with it. And I'm dying to get my hands on the Quest 3. I've got another headset coming very soon, which is the Lynx, which is another standalone, which is more of an AR thing. But I find myself kind of getting back into it. And of course, I've got a massive film coming up where I have to spend an enormous amount of time in VR. And I find myself like getting back into the specs again, looking at like resolution, like, okay, we're going to have one screen per eye in the Quest 3, the full color bars through, the pricing's kind of interesting. And obviously, there are new games coming out. This new Assassin's Creed, I don't know if you've seen that. That looks like it's going to be making me throw up a lot. I'm really excited to see it and to give it a go. Because some games I love in VR, but some games I just can't get there. I just feel like I want to throw up. So, yeah.
Well, also, yeah, and Roblox has rolled out now as well, which we talked about before. But yeah, loads there. That's interesting. And also, this was...
Have you played Roblox VR?
Yeah, I have. I played the beta version. I really like that they're doing it. I think it's really cool. I think it's massively exciting for Roblox and for them, but it made me feel weird because it didn't feel like it was optimized for VR, but they have rolled it out officially now. So I'm sure I need to go back and play it again and play with it a bit more, but it was a little bit like janky and I felt weird in it when I did it. But
yeah, I think pretty much no games on Roblox are optimized, but there is one game and I've watched my kids play it and I can't get my head around it. It's called VR Hands. Okay. VR Hands. Basically what happens is you've got regular Roblox characters that have a bunch of stuff to do. They can climb up, they can get to a spaceship. But there are obstacles along the way that can only be gotten over with the help of these hands. And those hands belong to people who are playing in VR.
Ah.
So the people who are playing in VR are massive and the people who are playing regular Roblox are tiny. And if you are one of these Roblox VR players, you can help the little tiny people by putting your hand out and carry them up and lift them, or you can just flick them. You can play ping pong with them. So they're completely helpless. So you're basically gods in the world. And like watching the interactions between these VR players, and they're not communicating, they're just intuiting what's going on and what might be nice to do. And they help each other. I was just watching my kids play this and they're like, oh yeah, this big, big hand's helping me. And like, oh, and then like I put one of them in VR playing. It's like, I've just been playing table tennis with somebody, but they're the ball. I was like,
yeah. That's cool. I need to get on that. I need to check that out. Mm.
When I saw them playing that, I was like, damn, that's a new thing. That's a new thing. It's not just you're in VR and you're playing the same experience. No, the VR component makes the game and the relationship between these two different game styles completely unique. It's cool. I mean, obviously it's still crappy graphics and basic, but the gameplay for my kids is endlessly fun because it's just so weird. And I actually was pretty I was pretty blown away by that.
That sounds very cool. Yeah, VR is great at being weird. That is definitely true. Okay, the next product that I wanted to talk about, because this, I'm always interested what gets the attention of my friends who are, you know, loosely sort of interested in this stuff, but in no way, deeply researching it all the time. And the video around the new Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses, which was pretty cool demo. People were replying on Instagram and just, you can tell, and it really hooks people. So that was interesting. And he demoed, they've already had these Ray-Ban smart glasses out where you're able to kind of catch video and photos and stuff, and also take calls and things, I think, on the first edition. I went and looked at it and I was like, this is cool. But it wasn't quite enough to make me buy it. But this next one has Meta AI integrated into it and will be multimodal, meaning that you'll be able to have an assistant with you all the time and chat to it like you would ChatGPT, but you can speak to it and it'll speak back, but also will recognize visually things in the world and you'll be able to ask it questions about that. So he demoed a leaky tap and then you were looking at it through the glasses and you could ask Meta AI, how would I fix this leaky tap? How good its response to that would be and how well this works, we'll have to see, but it was very cool to be like, okay, we now are, this is a product that is going to exist very soon and we have a personal AI assistant with us in the world who can see what we see. It was a pretty massive leap forward. I think there's some interesting questions it throws up that we'll talk about next, because ChatGPT also released a similar feature and around recognizing images and stuff. We'll get into that, can be problematic. Also, the other cool feature of these glasses is that you can live stream direct from them and you can flip between your phone and the glasses. So you can have POV live streams, which I'm sure we'll see loads of cool content around that. They showed someone in a car, and you got to, you know, be in the car with them because it was their point of view. Francis Bourgeois, for, I don't know if he's big in America, but he's big in the UK, influencer who loves trains. He's like real nerdy, but people have really warmed to him. And he straps a GoPro to his head and has a giant stretched face. Anyway, he's massive. I feel like we're going to see a lot of POV live streams.
And he's really posh as well.
He's, yeah, the whole thing is strange, but he's a lovely guy, but all accounts.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a man of the people and I like trains and I'm going to share that with the world. It's like, oh yeah, let me sit down and watch this. Yeah, it's not for me, but somebody's watching.
Lots of people are, yeah. These glasses are awesome. They really caught people's attention. I think this is cool. This is definitely, we're rapidly, like the fact that all these products have come out, you know, since the Zuck hate from the announcement in two years, maybe less than, I don't know, roughly 2 years. It's pretty crazy that these are shipping now. What are your thoughts?
I want them.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
I don't know what else to say. Like, okay, 10-year-old me seeing those, in. Like, technology like this, when I was a kid, I'm a bit older than you, like, all in. Want it. And like, it was obviously completely impossible and it was in the future some point. We are here now. And I do wonder sometimes like how much technology is ruining everything for everybody. Despite, you know, Silicon Valley VC saying, we're innovating productivity, we're making life better for everyone, we're improving the lives of everyone. It's like, are we? But this, yeah, I want it. I want them. They start at $299. They are Ray-Bans. And like,
yeah, they're going to take my money. They are. Meta are going to take quite a lot of my money off these announcements, I feel like.
But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, content. How much content can I make with this content? And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I do have to think about, like, you get really excited because this is really cool. And then just imagine yourself with them on. Like, okay, so you're walking around, like, it's great to, if you have a question, and I use ChatGPT for this all the time. I actually signed up again to ChatGPT-4. I cancelled it and then I did miss it. But for like creative ideas whilst you're walking around and things like that, that's what I think would be most useful, is being able to have this assistant with you all the time, just be able to ask it anything and get the response immediately.
But you have one with you all the time. It's your phone. Your phone, it's there.
I know, but it's not on your face and it's cool because it's glasses.
It's not on your face. So that's.
But that's what I mean. It's like how cool, how much better. It's definitely cool. I'm not gonna slag off because I don't want to. But in reality, is it gonna be a thing that you use and you're like, this is amazing, and then you don't. Like, how often are you gonna be sort of live streaming direct or whatever, and the quality is probably gonna be less than your. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's.
Yeah, but I mean that's always the way, isn't it? These things iteratively improve, as we know. The ability to pack more firepower into a smaller device is like tech's greatest magic trick, you know. Okay, they're glasses and they're Ray-Bans. Ray-Bans are inherently cool. They've always been cool. They've never stopped being cool. They kind of just, they are Ray-Bans. I'm going to read some of the announcement stuff here because it's a little bit kind of fruity. Since we launched our first generation smart glasses built in partnership with EssilorLuxottica, millions of moments have been captured and shared, from music festivals and birthday parties to first steps, graduations, and beyond. Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses free you from the constraints of a handheld camera. Instead of keeping the world at arm's length, or worse, missing out on the action completely as you struggle with your smartphone's lock screen, Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses let you snap a photo or video clip from your unique point of view, allowing you to not only relive the moment, but really live in the moment, too. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's classic, yeah, whatever. I know what it is. I don't need to be persuaded in a way that you think it's going to trick me. Like,
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm too busy struggling with my phone's lock screen. Oh, no, I can't open my phone. My face is broken. It doesn't work. Really? Really? Is it that hard?
You're more likely to fumble trying to find the button that turns the camera on the...
Spoiler, you don't need to unlock your phone to use the camera on an iPhone.
Yeah, true, actually, yeah. Yeah.
You don't. And if you're doing that, you're doing it wrong. So you can actually live in the moment. No, I'm being harsh here. There's nothing like you just don't see people going like
pressing the side of the head all the time, yeah.
And what happens is it's like recording. You get like a little recording. Stopped recording. Or recording ends. Man, they should get me to do all the voices for all the tech gadgets in perpetuity.
Smashed it, to be fair. I do want to say one thing.
I'm in the wrong game.
You were talking about was that is tech making stuff better? And I do think, and Zuck talked about this, obviously I've fallen for all of his words here, but you know, we have got to this point, and it's interesting with the iPhone releases, like the iPhone 15, there was a few cool things, but we all know that like no one's that excited about the next iPhone because they're the same as the last thing. And also, we're at this full point where we're all down staring at screens all the time and looking at something that isn't in reality. This does feel like the new frontier where it's on our face and you're not going to be sort of bending down. Hopefully, you're going to be a bit more present. Maybe that's optimistic. Maybe you won't be because you'll be talking to the AI all the time. But this switch and the kind of blending of digital and physical in front of you, I think is a good move. It's like, I think we've come off the wave of like devices being everywhere and staring at them all the time and sedentary at home on laptops for hours and hours and hours. Maybe we'll be able to walk around with glasses and chat and do work that way. I think that's a better world, I think.
It does lead to this conversation. It's like, we need to improve this technology. You can just imagine people sitting around a table. The technology is a problem. Like, has anyone got any suggestions of how to make this better? Someone puts their hand up. I think we should put it on our faces. So imagine, fridges, they don't work properly. What's the solution? Put them on your face. Microwave not really working for us. Put it on your face. Car, I got a solution for cars. Put them on your face. It's amazing how few technologies or technical devices come to a point where the solution to making it better is to put it on your face. Like,
well, you know where it goes after that. Put it in your brain.
We've talked about this before. It's inevitable. Having a stupid rectangle with a screen that gets fingerprints all over it and it has to be cleaned off and runs out of battery in a day, fundamentally stupid. This is a fundamentally stupid device. It's been fantastic for basically those with the desire to have a television in their hands or connectivity, all that stuff. Fundamentally, stupid device. Putting it on your face, even more stupid. And yet, this is where we are. This is where we are. And this is where we're going. And of course, as you know, and as we've talked about, where does it go next? Inside. So you've got a Zuckoscopy in your future coming up.
That's going to be mad when we see the keynotes where they're like, announcing this week the brand new brain interface where blah, 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 blah. The features, that is going to happen. Absolutely mad.
Introducing the Meta Suppository. Stick this.
Pop up your bum.
Up your booty hole. And enjoy a fully immersive experience from the inside. Yeah.
They'll always say immersive, whatever it is.
Deeper bass, because it's going right up your colon.
Oh, wow. it's all happening.
We are available for any conferences or live events you have coming up, and we're very cheap.
The final thing that I want to say from all the Meta Connect announcements, this one was like weird, but I get it. There's interesting things here as well, is the like consumer chatbot celebrities that you've got to be able to speak to. So they've got like Snoop Dogg as your dungeon master. I think you can play games with him by talking to him. Tom Brady is like a sports expert. Kylie Jenner is your relationship expert and more. There's a good, I do think it's really interesting. We saw it with like the OnlyFans stars first, obviously, where you are able to sort of scale your digital self to be always available to speak to your audience. Or if you're an expert, answer questions on expertise that you can't physically be available. That idea of like celebrities renting out their digital likeness is a big idea, and that's going to be massively profitable if people, especially actors, maybe not the big celebrities, are paid, you know, correctly and stuff. That's really interesting. This, I don't know, it's kind of fun. I don't see myself massively using it, because also, if you want, like, what's the difference? I just go to ChatGPT, like, okay, there's not personality there. I get it. I think it'd be cool in the smart glasses, for example, that you could change the personality a bit and have fun with it, maybe. So it's not bad, but it didn't get me as excited as the rest of it. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I get really excited about this. This is Jarvis, right? It's Iron Man and Jarvis. It's, you know, a personalized robot assistant that has a personality that you can mix and match, and you get bored with it, and like something comes up and you're like, I can see people really getting excited about that. And if you can now use codec avatars and get a really lifelike, exciting version of that, could be really interesting. I think, you know, one of the AI use cases that has always popped up is like bringing back loved ones and having conversations with them. You pair, you know, an LLM version of a loved one with a codec avatar, there is a way for you to then have a conversation with someone from your past and take some comfort from that. That is going to be deeply profound and probably become massively normalized quite fast, I would say. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know, but it's inevitable now, I think.
Mm. They talk about it in the podcast actually, and say that, you know, there's probably like all technology, there's a level where it's helpful potentially, where it might get you through a stage like that, but then you quickly go over to the level where it's unhelpful and stuff. So yeah, it is wild that is possible now, that could happen. It's just not in consumer hands. But yeah, you made a good point with the celebrity AI stuff. That's for when I look at my friends and the wider public, like, yeah, that's probably how they're gonna come into having virtual assistants, is a celebrity that they like or whatever. That makes sense. So maybe that is smart. Also, I saw a tweet, sorry to bring it up, but as we know, technology and porn always go hand in hand first. Mixed reality porn is going to be a massively lucrative market, isn't it? Like, imagine codec avatars or just mixed reality people in your physical environment, if that's your thing. Just even if you think that's good or bad, whatever, it's going to be a thing that exists, and someone is going to make a lot of money out of it for sure. I saw a post on that.
There are concerns that young people are exposed to too much pornography.
No doubt, yeah.
At too early an age, and it creates an unrealistic expectation of intercourse and the conjoining of two consenting adults or whatever in physical interactions. I think everything should be digital and censored, and we should have no appearance from the neck down. It should just be floating heads. And I mean, dude, I don't know where it's going. But I do know I have two young children, and I am scared. I'm scared for them. How are you supposed to be a parent in the middle of all of this? It's seriously tough. Like, limiting screen time for the kids, because what you notice with them is that they come off a session playing Roblox and they're red in the face and they're cranky. Something's happened, and like, you know, we have to ration TV time and all this, and we have to ration screen time. For this big film we've got coming up, I'm going to be pushing the limits of what you're supposed to do in VR. And there's a reason for that, because I just want to figure out what happens to you.
Also, sorry, as a parent, I imagine that's going to be hard for you to limit screen time for your kids when you're doing a world record in VR where it's all screen time.
Yes, but I can speak to them from a position of authority. That's the difference. Right. Like,
I see.
Anyway, we have devoted a disproportionate amount of time on this podcast it was inevitable, really, wasn't it? There was so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Yeah. Let's move on, though. Yeah. Should we go into the Epic Games announcement?
Yes.
A letter, a post that Tim Sweeney wrote, which was very honest, very heartfelt, very sort of clear. I thought it was very well written, but I was quite surprised that they are laying off 16% of their workforce, which is a sizable chunk. I can read a little bit of this. For a while now, we've been spending way more money than we earn investing in the next evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators. I had long been optimistic that we could power through this transition without layoffs, but in retrospect, I see that this was unrealistic. While Fortnite is starting to grow again, the growth is driven primarily by creator content with significant revenue sharing, and this is a lower margin business than we had when Fortnite Battle Royale took off and began funding our expansion. Success with the creator ecosystem is a great achievement, but it means a major structural change to our economics. The nice thing to pick up here is that they are moving, and the 40% revenue share that they have in a pot for UEFN creators that you can earn from if you build cool stuff, that they are putting creators first in that way. They've put up a big chunk of their revenue to go to creators for the ecosystem. So that has to be like championed. That's a good thing. And it's clearly, you know, the margins are less, so it's in the short term, it looks like it's hurting the company, but they're sticking to it. So I thought that was very valiant. But what are your thoughts here?
Okay, so I've done quite a lot of deep dives into Epic and their business model, their acquisitions, their financial history. They are still a private company, so it's quite difficult to get financial data from them. But there's quite a few pieces of information and context that are required for this story. So we should probably dig into that, because I think a lot of people got really angry about this. Just a couple of tweets here. Jordan DeFries said, if you fuck up bad enough that 900 of your own employees lose their jobs, you should be laid off too. That's one helpful tweet there. Shinobi602 said, there's something messed up about 2023 being one of the absolute best years for video games, one of the worst for video game creators. And I think that's sort of reflective of a wider problem within the gaming industry, that it's just splintering and fracturing off and being kind of attacked from all sorts of different sides. And AI has played a huge part in that. The way game studios are structured also has played a huge part in that. So we've probably the first thing we should do is look at these layoffs in the context of other layoffs that have happened. So Epic has laid off 16% of its staff. And if we do the maths, it ends up that they've got a headcount of around 5,000 people working at Epic, which is not a lot when you compare it with Facebook. Facebook has been laying off tens of thousands of people for, you know, a couple of years already. And in, you know, in the broader tech industry, only Apple haven't laid people off yet. Yet. I would be surprised if we didn't see some layoffs at Apple. I don't know how you can sustain the headcount that they have while everyone else is laying off. They laid off 500 employees, about 5% or so. Unity laid off 600, 8% of the workforce in May. So in the context of that, it's amazing that Epic lasted as long as they did without laying people off. And I think one of the things that's surprising for people is just the suddenness with which this decision came about, because all these other companies were laying off. Why wasn't Epic laying people off? And so you have to kind of look at the way Epic makes money. Epic is a very strange company in that its sort of main product, which is Unreal Engine, is free. And it's, you know, it tries to get that product into as many hands as possible. We've had this whole controversy around Unity's pricing model. With Epic, if you reach a certain threshold of revenue, then you have to start paying them a license fee. But most people are using Unreal Engine pretty much for free, including us. So their main cash cow is Fortnite, obviously. So in terms of their revenue, it fluctuates, and it's hard to get the exact numbers, but it's around $5 to $6 billion a year. And the vast majority of that revenue comes from Fortnite. So if you now think about 40% of the company's revenue, and the large chunk of it is now being, you know, carved off to give to incentivize creators to build on Fortnite to create this much larger ecosystem. Now, if you're, you know, your main product, your main cash cow is Fortnite, and you need to grow that pot, then you obviously need to figure out how to do that. And so they're looking at the Roblox model to do that. Roblox makes its money from brand integrations. It makes its money from advertising and from in-game items, these kind of things. So it takes a piece of all of those, and it gets money from creators as well when they make things. And one of the criticisms leveled at, you know, Fortnite and UFN is that they basically incentivize making garbage experiences that nobody really enjoys just so you get people building on the platform. But if you look at Roblox, there are an unbelievable number of games that nobody ever plays. It's only a very small number. And this is, you know, pure power law where people actually play the games. This is market dynamics. This is survival of the fittest. This is entrepreneurial soup. And those who are very good at that will thrive, and those who are not won't. And then there'll be this kind of very dispersed middle class of creators that sort of get by, but it's not great. It's the same on YouTube. It's the same on any of these content platforms. You just get these 1 or 2% that are making up the vast majority of the income, of the excitement. And it just takes a while for that to play out. The other thing that we should bear in mind is that we're not in a pandemic anymore, but the effects of the pandemic are still being felt on a huge scale. And you have to add to that the fact that, you know, the workforce, the way we work, the way things are done was just completely discombobulated by the pandemic. And things had to rebalance and resettle. There was a huge amount of money that came into the economy. Inflation just went through the wazoo. And on a macro level, the market was pricing in an interest rate drop. There was unfounded optimism in the markets that there was going to be a drop in interest rates, and everything was kind of starting to pick up. We were starting to see interest in M&As again. We're starting to see an interest in just people investing again. And Jerome Powell said, no, just recently, very, very recently, in fact, that's not what's going to be happening here. we will be holding interest rates where they are through until 2024. And that basically, if you're a company of the size of Epic, is really, really bad news. So you're sitting there thinking, okay, you know, the ad revenue model, which is what really Fortnite will need to move to in order to sustain itself. It can't sustain itself just pillaging its own piggy bank. There needs to be a revenue model that's separate to them. Surely that's coming. But if you think about, you know, interest rates staying where they are, there won't be any advertising coming in, and you can't model out projections for what, you know, the likely cool off of your, you know, your own money that's been poured in. You just can't do it. So it's very clear that the layoffs came as a response to looking at these interest rates and saying, we can't sustain this. It cannot be done. And they tried really hard, apparently, to maintain at a level and keep people in their jobs. But at a certain point, the maths just do not add up. They do not. And you have to act as a responsible CEO of a company that has these overheads. You got to act. And it's harsh. It's really, really harsh. But if you take that macro view and you look at what might have caused this to happen, it's just economics. It's just plain and simple economics. And if you know, they're not stupid, they figured where things were and where what they could afford, this was it. But it's not, and things change, and it's really harsh. So that hopefully that gives people some context for why this might have happened and who else was laying off and why it's not such a surprise and why it's actually, for the UEFN's setup itself, probably a really positive thing as well.
Yeah, it is actually interesting in the context of everything else, and yeah, like it's where we are in the financial cycle, isn't it? That they want to crush and kind of get unemployment up and break stuff by keeping interest rates high to the point. But we know what will happen; they will break. Things companies are laying off, then maybe banks will be in trouble again, who knows, maybe, and then money printers probably come back on to save everything at some point in the future, and off we go again, I would guess, is the way of the cycle. But we'll see.
Well, there's a war in Ukraine. Companies are, particularly tech companies, are in deep shit. Like, they are in deep shit, and this news, it's gonna cause a lot of companies to just give up. There's only so much pain you can take. And if you are raising money at this point in time, my God, you're going to have to work hard for it. And you have to be really ruthless about it. And this is a good thing. This is a Ragnarok style cleansing of everything, which was long overdue. You know, we get these in crypto every 4 years, but this in the broader tech industry, you know, it was a 10-year cycle, 10 years of only up. Imagine that. You sit there and sweet, bruv. But, you know, what tends to happen in these cycles is those who are the toughest, the best equipped, the most perspicacious.
What does that mean?
Thrive. Perspicacious.
Yeah.
Seeing clearly.
Ah, okay.
It's not just a podcast. It's an education.
It's an education.
That's what an English major does for you. It gets you just like, you just dig into your little thought fridge, the coolest words you can find.
Delicious thought fridge.
Just chill it right down. One last thing. We should talk about Bandcamp. Because they divested Bandcamp, and Epic bought Bandcamp last year. We don't know how much for. Bandcamp, social music, a fair deal for musicians. It felt like a really good marketplace that they could add on to, because Epic has been trying to, you know, fight this fight with Apple over marketplace fees and everything else. And they've always took a stance where they were like, we're for the creators. We're for people who are creating on our platforms. And they're fighting this massive lawsuit, which isn't cheap. But Bandcamp unionized just recently because... I mean, they felt that was the best way for them to get a better deal for their workers. And now Epic has let them go. So I don't know what story that tells, but you can draw your own conclusions. Unionization, the writers have done a deal now. We're waiting for the actors to do the same thing. But you know, union power, it's out there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So yes, the next story is to do with OpenAI, GPT-4, and this idea of multimodality. So ChatGPT, OpenAI, announced and showed a demo video this week of a feature that is being slowly rolled out to ChatGPT Pro or paid users, where you're able to drop an image into the chat and then ask things about it. And people have been using it in really creative ways. Someone took a picture of a really complicated parking sign that had all these different instructions on it that you'd look at and be like, can I park here at this time? And ChatGPT was like, yeah, you can park here on if it's Wednesday between 1 and 2 p.m. or whatever. It was quite a funny post. People also have done amazing stuff like drawn stuff on the whiteboard in a meeting, like kind of flowchart stuff where they've crossed out various bits that in conversation they were like, oh, we're not using that, and then have asked ChatGPT to kind of build it into a website or into something following the visuals that they can do. Someone did a picture of an eye diagram in like a biology book, and were able to ask, like having a private tutor, about all the sections of the eye and everything it understood. And so loads of really interesting things. And this is kind of related as well to when we talk about smart glasses. That's what it's using here as well. Multi-modality, meaning it can understand, you know, visual and audio inputs as well. But there are some interesting problems with this. So they are testing a lot of this. They've abbreviated it to GPT-4V, which is primarily being used as a sort of a Be My Eyes app to assist blind and low vision individuals, which is obviously a great use case of this technology as well. But despite its capabilities, OpenAI haven't rolled it out fully. Some users seem to have it, but there's various concerns about kind of misuse and privacy. And so they've written this technical paper on it. Basically, the problems that they've identified, some of them are kind of safeguarding stuff, like it might be able to break captures on websites, which are designed to stop loads of kind of attacks and stuff like that. And it can do things like estimate age, race, and other things from photos, which might be problematic, obviously, if it's incorrect, and drawing conclusions that might not be right. And there's always conversation about biases in the data and conclusions it's drawing from things that it recognizes that are complex and maybe not, the technology might not be there yet. And of course, we know that ChatGPT hallucinates quite often, stating false facts very confidently. That gets even more complex with visual things. OpenAI explicitly advises against using GPT-4V for identifying dangerous substances based on images due to misidentifications. There's been some inconsistent results with medical imaging as well, which is obviously a problem. Sometimes it misunderstands certain context of certain hate symbols and things like that, because obviously context has maybe changed over time, depending on what data it's using, showing bias against certain sexes and body types when the safeguards are disabled. So yeah, they're kind of working through these problems. The technology is obviously amazing, but as we kind of get to more complex AI models that are more nuanced as well, that, you know, beyond language and written text, the problems compound as well. So this is something that obviously wasn't mentioned with the Snapchat and Meta AI glasses, but will be a thing that they will have to make sure they safeguard against. So yeah, that's where we are with it. Obviously it's quite deep and technical, a lot of these things, but interesting as well that these new technologies are opening up problems.
Yeah, I think at this point you just assume that anything that you could imagine it will be possible to do. The question is really just whether you want to use that rather than anything else. I always come back to just the cost of all of this, the cost of the compute. At a certain point, we will flip to a place where the cost of compute comes down sufficiently for it to just be everywhere. Not sure we're there yet. I keep looking at AI services for things, and then I look at the pricing plans. Like, ugh, I'm not sure I can. Not sure I can do that at the moment. So I think we're still waiting for that. But for the time being, all the AI thread guys that had sort of slowly died, well, they've had a shot in the arm now. New stuff for them to thread about. Such threads as, it's only been out 16 hours, but here are 20 mind-blowing things it can already do. It's like, you know, written by AI, by the way.
This is dead now because of this. The classic stuff.
Yes. AI just killed, insert name of thing here. Now anyone can. It's like, yeah, can they? Can they? Should they? I don't know.
Yeah, lots to think about there, but that is probably the pod for today, I think.
It is the pod. What an optimistic, hopeful pod it was. It sort of went from layoffs to Zuck. Team Zuck. Do you know what? I want to fight Zuck. He makes a big noise about how good he is at MMA and how he just likes to crush people. I would genuinely like to just step in a ring, virtual otherwise, physical ring, just look him in the eye and go, I can have you, bruv. or just to be completely humiliated by him and tap out. I could also do that. So Zuck, if you're listening, and I know you're not, but if you are, my offer's on the table. I may not be Elon, but I'm slightly younger and I could probably do a decent job.
You might be able to do it with haptic suits and codec avatars in the future. Anyway, that's it for today. So yeah, thanks for listening. Make sure you share the pod if you find it interesting, and see you next week. Boom.